It's Sunday, the 20th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Jamal Crawford and Jakarr Sampson. Monster Show brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Fifth Horseman 86. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast for a day just like Fifth Horseman 86, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be the sponsor of the show. So make sure you, if you've got a spare minute and you do enjoy the show, just leave that quick review. It helps immensely in attracting sponsors and keeping the show plugging along every single night of the NBA season, which is what we've done so far this year. If you are watching this show on YouTube, you can also subscribe there, obviously. But if you're watching live on YouTube, which we might have a few more of you watching along live because the show is a lot earlier today because of the early finishes of the games, if you want to interact live with the show, tweet at me at redrock_bball. You can see my Twitter handle at the bottom of the screen, and we'll try to interact with as many tweets that come through as we're recording. Big day in the NBA. Some big games, some big results, some big performances. So
let's get to it.
What I'm also going to do today, in addition to the usual box score reviews, in addition to the usual DFS previews, it's fantasy playoffs time. It is heading into the Sunday of a fantasy playoffs. And what we're going to do is try and look at guys who can help you win individual categories for Sunday. And some of these guys might be available in your league. Some of these guys might not be available. We're going to go through each of the eight categories and go through... You're not including turnovers, because obviously if you want a guy to give you no turnovers, you don't play anyone. But we're going to look at each individual category and tell you who's going to be the best guy to add off the waiver wire to help you win in that category tomorrow. Well, hopefully that's the idea. If you guys are interested at all in my quest for a three-peat in my hometown league, I got through the semifinal today, so I'm looking forward to that matchup in the next, starting on Monday. So that was it was a tight one, came down. I think I ended up winning by... two turnovers in that league, really small amount of free throw percentage as well, and lost blocks by one or something along those lines. It was a 5-4 victory, so it ended up being a pretty tight one. But you don't want to hear me talk shit about my league. Let's get into the daily contest on Instagram. We're looking at Markieff Morris, how many combined points, rebounds, and blocks he would have. The answer was 21, and at Jelgmork got that one correct. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that's Joachim from Denmark, I'm going to say. So I apologize, Joachim, if I got that one right. Oh, wrong, sorry. If I got it right, I don't apologize. On Facebook, we were looking at Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
How many combined points, assists, and steals that Jeff would get? He was pretty poor. He only had 12, and nobody got that one correct. So let's look to Sunday's games. On Instagram, we're going to go with Chris Paul. How many combined points, assists, and steals that CP3 will have? And on Facebook, it is DeMarcus Cousins. Combined points, rebounds, steals, and blocks. So make sure you look for those posts on the various social media sites and leave your answer and get yourself a shout out on the show as we are on the next day, if you get it right. The monstrous line of the night is Kevin Durant of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Yesterday's show in the DFS preview section, we're talking about all the high-priced small forwards and how they had some difficult matchups and it was tough to rely upon them. And Kevin Durant were putting Paul George were two guys that I highlighted who hadn't been, they'd been sort of up and down in their DFS value for their cash price. They were going head-to-head with each other, and they both turned in fantastic performances. In fact, they were number one and two in the monstrous line of the night rankings. Durant ended up with 33 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists, but he added 3 triples, 3 steals, and 1 block. He was 11 of 20 from the field, and he was 8 of 10 from the free throw line. Durant has been phenomenal this season. He is the second-ranked player over the course of the year in 8 category leagues, averaging 28 points, 8.3 rebounds, which... That doesn't really get highlighted often enough, but he is averaging 8.3 rebounds, which is almost, from his MVP season, it's an extra rebound per game. It's massive. He's at 4.9 assists, and in fact, over the last month, he's at 6.1 assists. These are massive numbers. 0.9 steals, 1.3 blocks, 51 and 90 are his percentages. He's just off the 50-40. And 50-40-90 club, he's going 39% from three. He's turning in truly an amazing season that he's lost in the the brilliance that is Steph Curry's year. But Durant, the foot issue is thankfully not an issue. It was a real risk coming into the season, but thankfully it has not been an issue apart from a little hiccup earlier on when he had that hamstring problem. Everything is A-OK for Durant, and let's hope that it stays that way for the rest of his career. So a big, big night from Kev Durant. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Taj Gibson of the Chicago Bulls, who played 31 minutes on that dodgy hamstring. He's owned in only 40% of leagues. He went 15-10. He had two steals and two blocks and a fantastic 7-of-9 shooting from the field. Now, Gibson is owned in very few leagues. His upside's not that high, but really at this time of the year, your caring for upside is not, it's not everything. He has been a top 100 player over the last month. He's been almost a top 50 guy over the last 2 weeks. And with Pau out, he's going to be a solid guy. But what we need to look at really is what does he bring you? Well, he's subpar in points. He's a good rebounder. He's given you 7.4 rebounds the last couple of weeks. A steal, 1.3 blocks. They're good numbers. Really huge field goal percentage, 63%. Now that's 10% over his season numbers. Is that going to continue? It'll probably drop. We go to his free throws. He's at 86% over the last 2 weeks. He's at 67 on the year. Those numbers, those percentage numbers are leading to a real hot streak here for Taj, but they will come down. He's a fine guy to add, but his upside is not massive. It's definitely not top 50 where he's currently ranking. That will drop. That'll probably be the peak of where he ranks for the season. But he's a nice guy to get some field goal percentage and to get some rebounds. But by no means is he an absolute lock guy that you need to add and have to hold on to Taj. And this is a big line, but this will probably be his best performance for the rest of the season. I don't imagine he'll have a 15-10, 2-2 game that'll happen again for the rest of this year. But still, he's available. He can be used, clearly. Just don't expect goodness like this. The young gun of the night. Gives me great pleasure to push this button.
Percentages.
Ah, there we go. Finally got to break out my Porzingis jersey, which I received a couple of weeks ago, but he has been buried with the shittiness of Kurt Rambis's coaching. He has been not only limited with his minutes, but played completely out of position, and not played out of position, but played the game style has not been to his benefit, which is ludicrous when he's the best player on your team. I know there's Mallow, but I'm talking future here, that you've got to run things for Porzingis, and it hasn't been happening, and that's all on Rambis. And some of it, you hear a lot of rookie wall talk, but he hasn't been given the opportunity to play. And yes, he's had some bad nights, but it's coaching. And I never thought I'd be one to say, I wish Derek Fisher was back. Now, Fisher had his own issues, and he just seems like a massive shit bloke, but at least he knew how to use Porzingis properly. Rambis has got no concept whatsoever. And it's really disturbing if you're a Knicks fan. I've talked about it at length. The Kings, if you're a Kings fan, you're in trouble. If you're a Lakers fan, it's not good. If you're a Knicks fan, it's almost as bad as those three, those other two, if not equally as bad, given the situation, front office and coaching and assets and all that sort of thing. It's really a bad situation in New York at the moment. But Porzingis was great here. He played 39 minutes, which is massive considering he'd only been here 23, 24 in the other games. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2 triples, 2 assists, and 3 blocks. And it's not really a surprise given what we'd seen from Porzingis to start the season. It's more of a surprise given that he just hasn't had that opportunity under Rambis lately. In the last 2 weeks, he's ranked outside the top 160. He's only been playing 28 minutes a game in that stretch. He's only playing 27 minutes a game in the last month. That needs to go up, and his field goal percentage is down, and some of that is, yes, his shots aren't falling, but it's also some of the way that the offense is being run, and he's not being given shots in the right spot, and he's not being utilized correctly. It hasn't been pretty to watch. It hasn't been pleasant, but he broke out of his slump here. It would have been really tough to have dropped him. I would imagine that he's still owned in all leagues, and I think you obviously have to continue doing that. But let's hope there's more of these games coming forward. I'm not holding my breath, though, unfortunately. Let's hope Kurt Rambis doesn't coach his team next season. Fingers crossed. The dart of the night. Timmy Duncan of the San Antonio Spurs is owned in 87% of leagues. I'm sure that any of the teams that are still alive do not own Tim Duncan. So if you do, please, there's zero need for this. He moved to the bench in this one in a matchup situation so Boris Diaw could start and match up better against Draymond Green. And the Warriors were going real small with Green at center and starting Brandon Rush. So the Spurs did the same thing. And they started Aldridge at centre, Diaw at the four. And Duncan was terrible. 1 point and two rebounds. That's terrible from a fantasy point of view. But he only saw the court for 8 minutes. It was Pop going with the matchups. It shows what a legend that Duncan is. I don't imagine there'd be too much complaining from him, considering the Spurs got the big victory on the road. And there's going to be times like this. And he has been unownable, I reckon, for the last 2 months. Maybe 3 months. I'm not really sure why he's still sitting at 87% ownership and Tony Parker's at 65 and Danny Green's at 71. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I could go through plenty of examples throughout the league of players who are owned in lesser situations than what Tim Duncan is. He's been an okay guy. You can stream him if you want to get blocks, but even then, the last month, he's giving you less than a block a game, only 6.6 rebounds. He's averaging just 8.4 points this year. He's not doing much. He's shooting under 50%. He's never been a good free throw guy. He just isn't really worth owning. He's not. Unless you're talking, say, a 16-team league, then I would understand owning Tim Duncan. Anything shallower than that, I don't think there's much point in it. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineup for Saturday's games. All right, this was a game where a lot of these situations, I talked about them yesterday, they panned out in a very odd way. George Hill at 40.1. I guess playing Russell Westbrook is really the tonic that solves everything because Hill had been putrid up until this one, but really took it out on Westbrook. 40.1 points for him. Shelvin Mack, even with the return of Gordon Hayward, well, he was one that I got right yesterday. That was a great investment at 33. Tim Hardaway moved to the bench and still put up numbers, 27.6. There is something to be said about the Atlanta Hawks because it's going to this team and being subjected to their coaching staff and their organization, it makes players better. Kent Bazemore was garbage. He's still not great, but he was garbage when he played for the Lakers and the Warriors. Into Atlanta, he actually turns into a serviceable player. And Damari Carroll was garbage in Utah. He heads to Atlanta, almost an all-star. Gets big money, goes to Toronto, and let's be honest, not as good in Toronto. Nowhere near as good. Tim Hardaway, crap. Didn't play for about the first 40 games of the season because I imagine that Atlanta said, we do not like what we're seeing from you. You aren't doing what we want. He worked at it, which is credit to him, that he did that work and he did everything that he needed to do based on what they wanted him to do. And now he's literally a key part of their rotation. He can fill in seamlessly when someone gets hurt and he's providing spark off the bench. And you know, I've never been a big Tim Hardaway fan and I thought that it was a bad trade from the Hawks at the draft. And it's worked out okay for them in recent times. I think part of it working out okay is because the Knicks have been totally misusing Jerry and Grant, but that's another issue. But Hardaway putting up some nice numbers. Jim Harden put up 45.2, solid night from him, but apparently he was limping after the game, so all fantasy owners are obviously holding their breath there. Small forwards, well, these are the two guys. I talked about all these high-priced small forwards and how they all had little quirks and issues to work through for Saturday's games. Paul George, 61.4. Kev Durant, 65.6. Massive games. Power forwards, Taj Gibson, 38.5. And Zach Randolph, back after an extended layoff with that knee issue, and comes in and posts his first career triple-double. I said yesterday, I think my quote was, even if Randolph plays, I'm not going to be using him. And I think that's, in hindsight, it's still probably the right move because he didn't know how he was going to be able to move. He was playing against a Clippers team who's got really good defense against power forwards. And we've never seen Randolph put up numbers anywhere near this. And he did it all. It was a complete, what the hell's going on? You couldn't have used that in cash. It was a real tournament option. And Randolph's back. So if he's available on your waiver wire, which he very well easily could be because he would have been dropped in a lot of situations, you want to go and add him. Aaron Baines at center, 32.9. Career night from Baines. Whenever he gets numbers, and I've said this plenty of times, whenever he gets an opportunity, he will put up numbers. It's almost guaranteed. It's just being able to predict when that happens. It's a real tough one. Hard to predict in this one. The Nets, the starters were bad for the Pistons, and Van Gundy just ran with his bench unit, and all the bench guys, which we'll talk about later, Baines, Stan Johnson, Anthony Tolliver, all put up big numbers in the second half. That lineup would have got you 398.5. I'm going to venture a guess and say absolutely no one ran with that lineup because it was it's a little bit of a weird one. But hey, you never know. Some people are weird. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about the games in just a little bit more detail. All right, guys, we are back looking at these games. You can see up on the screen if you are watching along live. So not even live. If you're watching along on replay, you can see the box scores up on your screen. The first game we're going to cover is the Denver Nuggets and the Charlotte Hornets. Ken Faried was out with his back issue, and Darrell Arthur, this is the Darrell Arthur that I've been looking forward to and hoping we were going to get. It hasn't happened all that often, but 35 minutes from Darrell, 13-8, 3 assists, and a Richie Benno, a double-triple-one, 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks on 5 of 10 shooting. He's shown a penchant for being able to do this for most of the season until Danilo Gallinari went down, and then he sort of dropped off. But if Faried is going to miss time, then Arthur is going to be a great DFS value, and he's going to be a real sneaky standard league ad as well. He's not going to be this good every game, I think that goes without saying, but he's going to be pretty good. A guy who is available in leagues, he's only 21% of leagues, is DJ Augustine, who played 23 minutes here and had 24 points. He hit 3 threes, he had 3 assists, a steal. He went 8 of 11 from the field. Augustine has been a revelation since arriving in Denver. He is playing behind Emmanuel Mudiay, he's playing next to Emmanuel Mudiay. He is a top 100 player over the last month. In that time, he is averaging 13.5 points, 2 threes, 4.7 assists, a steal on 47-84. Now, he's always been an elite free throw shooter. The 47% shooting is an anomaly because he was a 40 guy last year, 42 the year before, 35 the year before that, 38 the year before that. Although those Indiana and Charlotte years, he was just shit and then he became good all of a sudden. Not really sure how that happened, but it did. I think you got to own Augustine. In 12-team leagues, he's providing value. You need assists. There's no better option out there. He gives you 2 threes a game. He gives you really good free throw percentage. He gives you steals. He is a key part of what they're doing here in Denver, and that's an impressive win on the road in Charlotte. Augustine, is it revenge factor? Probably not. That's a while since he's been in Charlotte, but that is a huge performance from him. Gaz Harris was solid, 13-4. Will Barton, 12-6. He only played 23 minutes, and Barton's minutes are going to be limited like this on occasion because of the way that Augustine's playing. Harris is not going to lose minutes. Malone loves him. He's going to play 33 almost every night. He played 37 here. Barton is going to lose minutes. Nikola Jokic only played small amount here, 25, but as I've said plenty of times, he does not need 30 minutes. It'd be great if he could get them, but he doesn't need them. 11 and 14, 1-3, 4 assists, 1 block, 5 of 16 shooting is not ideal, but still, he has to be owned, obviously. Yusuf Nurkic got 18 minutes, and Joffrey Lavernier played 13. Nurkic looked alright, 10-3 with a steal and a block, and he's always been a really good per-minute guy. You just need to see 24, 25 minutes out of him to really consider him in your standard formats, and that's not going to happen with Jokic there. Emmanuel Mudiay, 11-7-4, but back to killing your percentages, 4 of 15, 2 of 4 from the free throw line. Only one turnover, so I can say he sort of solved that issue, but the percentages are going to continue to be a problem. Jakar Sampson, day before his birthday, had 7 points in 23 minutes. Not all that exciting there. The Hornets, Nick Batum, he's definitely one of my men. 24, 8, and 9, 5 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. Just, he's really good. And I know a lot of people, I still see hate for Nick Batum in plenty of places, forums, Twitter. Oh, yeah, wasting my time trading for Nick Batum. What do you want from Nick Batum? Like, what more could you possibly want than what he's done this season? Surely what he's doing has been a benefit to you. He's ranked 32nd on the season. You didn't draft him with pick 32. I can guarantee you that. I wouldn't have had a problem with you doing it. But he has been fantastic for nearly all of the season. At the moment, he's shooting at a red-hot rate. That will drop somewhat, but his value doesn't come from his really good shooting. It comes from his ability to get rebounds, to block, to get steals, to hit threes, to get assists. He's been a fantastic player for this team next year. He's going to make a stack of money next year, and rightfully so. He's been someone that I've been a big fan of for quite a while, and he is really coming to the party this year. Cody Zeller played through that knee issue. He had an outstanding 4 blocks in the first quarter, only finished with 5, but that's still a big performance. 10 points and 2 rebounds in 29 minutes. And if that doesn't sell you on Cody Zeller is going to be the starter for this team, I'm not sure what will. Cody Zeller is owned in 16% of leagues. Al Jefferson is owned in 87%. That's way too high for Al Jefferson. Now, Jefferson was good here, 10-6 with 3 blocks in 19 minutes. But this is what he is going to do. He is going to play 19 to 20 minutes. It is going to take that Zeller injury for him to play. He is not a great ad in 12-team leagues. 87% of people, there's a lot of them who are owning him incorrectly. And most of them should be eliminated by now, but it is based only on name value. Because he is not the starting center. He will not be the starting center unless something happens to Zeller. Kemba Walker, 15-7-5 with two steals. Inefficient, but still pretty good. And Jeremy Lin, probably one of his better games in recent times. 16 points with two threes. Added three rebounds and a steal, but he's more that 14-team league sort of guy. Marv Williams struggled, 2 of 9 for 5 points, had 5 rebounds, 2 blocks and a steal, so got some other numbers there, but one of his worst performances in recent memory as well. He obviously still needs to be held on to. The next game was the New York Knicks and the Washington Wizards. The Knicks got pumped again. Let's hope that all these wins, playing all your veterans big minutes, not these wins, all these losses with playing all your veterans big minutes, enables the Knicks to go, seriously, we cannot hire Rambis. He is doing everything he possibly can to get wins, and he's still not getting them. He has to go. Robin Lopez, 9-7, 3 blocks in 34 minutes. Bit of a bounce back for him, so that's good news. And Melo played 40 minutes. Now, okay, there's a couple of things about this Melo situation. 40 minutes is bullshit on the first night of a back-to-back. You lost by 10 anyway. It's ridiculous. I know Lance Thomas was hurt, but play someone else. Play Vucic. Yeah, 5 more minutes. Now, I'm not a massive fan of Vucic. Play Jerry and Grant more than 3 minutes. You could play Galloway at the 3 in a stretch. You play Derek Williams at the 3. Don't play Melo 40 minutes. Now, Melo was good. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and 2 triples. 7 of 21 shooting's not good, but he was good. The thing is that Melo, apparently, now there's two parts to this. Melo suffered a migraine in the first quarter and continued to play through it, and it was reevaluated after the game. Okay, so there's two things. I've talked about this before. Did he really have a migraine, or did he have a bad headache? Because if he had a migraine and he's out there playing under the bright lights and running around and noises and all that stuff, then the team is ridiculous. The team is criminally liable for that. You can't put a guy... this is what I said previously, if you haven't listened to that show when I had a migraine rant. I don't suffer migraines, but a migraine and a headache are not the same thing. And being someone who works in pharmacy, when people come in and say to you, oh, I've got a really bad migraine, you don't have a migraine. If you're walking around and in a place with fluorescent lights and interacting with people, you don't have a migraine. You have a migraine, you can't see, you can't open your eyes, you vomit, you feel nauseous, you can't listen to sounds. It is not a headache. It's a headache, but it's not a headache. And if Melo had a migraine, a legit migraine, what the hell is he doing on the court for 40 minutes, playing under bright lights, sweating, running around with crowds yelling in his head? What is he doing? It is beyond my comprehension how he's playing through a migraine. That's it. If it was an actual migraine and it was sort of just developing, because they go in waves, and if it started in that first quarter and then progressed and it was okay for a bit, then he's going to struggle to play tomorrow. But there's a couple of things. It either wasn't a migraine, or if it was and the Knicks put him out there for 40 minutes, then they are ridiculous. And I know they're ridiculous. So that's why I don't know what this actually is. And I'm talking way too long about Melo and his migraine, but this team just shits me to tears. Jose Calderon played 24 minutes and he suffered an ankle injury. And even with Jose Calderon suffering an ankle injury, we saw 3 minutes out of Jerry and Grant. Rambis is infuriating. 10 points for Calderon, 2 triples and 2 assists. If he misses any time with this ankle injury, he's not really a great own anyway. He was still useful because he was playing a batshit insane 35 minutes a game and getting you assists. But if he's going to be hurt, obviously he's expendable. That would mean that Langston Galloway will get more run, and it will mean that Jerry and Grant gets more run. Galloway played 20 minutes. He had 9 points, 4 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, 1 triple. He can produce, and he is going to be a very interesting target for Sunday's games if we hear that Calderon is out. Aaron Aflalo continues to play off the bench. 35 minutes for Aflalo. That's 2 straight games with 35 minutes off the bench for him. 10 points, 2 triples, 3 rebounds. You know my take on him. Hey, if you want points, you can add him, but please do not rely on him for anything else. Derek Williams played 18 minutes for 5 points, and Vucic went scoreless in his 13 minutes. On the Wizards, Johnny Wall, no triple-double, but still big. 24, 2 and 10, 2 threes, 1 steal, 1 block. Big performance, great percentages as well, and just 1 turnover. And Markieff Morris finally actually stayed on the court for a decent amount of time after the last 2 games being ejected, and the game before that having 5 fouls in 14 minutes. He played 36 here, went 17-4, had an assist, had 3 steals and a 3. It has been tough to hold on to him. I do still believe in him. And the next time the Wizards play, I'm all for going and adding him. He is hopefully going to work his way into being a key part of this team. people are very quick to interject personality into talent, and he does have talent, more talent than a lot of these people on this team. Marcin Gortat, 15 and 11, two assists and a block. So with a sore back, Whitman plays him more than when he didn't have a sore back, so that's interesting, but it's great for us. Otto Porter, 15 and 6 with three triples. That's a pretty solid game. And Brad Beal started, played 32 minutes, 10 points, 6 assists, a steal, and a 3. So a solid night from Beal. And he could be around your waiver wire, maybe. Garrett Temple went back to 16 minutes, and that's exactly where he should stay. 5 points, but 7 boards and 2 blocks is a little bit out of the ordinary. We can leave him for the deeper formats. And Alan Anderson was also back here, playing 18 minutes for 2 points. Obviously, Jared Dudley, with his 0 points in 12 minutes, any standard 14-16 team league appeal that he had prior to Markieff Morris's arrival is very clearly out the window. Brooklyn and Detroit. Thad Young, 24-9, a steal, 2 blocks. He went 12 of 17 from the field. That's a big performance from Thad. And the Nets pissed off all DFS players everywhere by announcing that Brook Lopez was out after lineups locked, with no hint of him having any sort of an illness before that, and saying, yeah, he's got a virus, he's out. So that obviously pisses people off, and there's not much you can do about it, unfortunately. But what it meant is that Willie Reed put in a big performance. He played 28 minutes and went 13 and 6 with 2 blocks. In the games that Lopez has sat, Reed has been really good. So if we see that Lopez misses any more time, Willie Reed becomes a very nice DFS target, and he becomes a very good streaming target. So make sure you've got his name just tucked in the back of your pocket. Henry Sims played 20 minutes, recently signed to a 10-day, 10-8 with a steal and a block. He was able to put up numbers in Philadelphia. He's not a great player, but he can put up stats if he gets a big role, but he's going to be stuck behind Reed. Bojan Bogdanovic's hot streak continued, and it wasn't to do with hot shooting this time. 7 of 16. Someone had to take the extra shots with Lopez out, so he got some extra shots here. 19, 5, and 2, 3 triples. Definitely a fine guy to own at the moment. The point guards were split completely down the middle. 24 minutes to Donald Sloan, 6 points and 9 assists. Sloan played the entire first quarter. Larkin played the entire second quarter. There is no concept of what they're doing in this point guard position at all, from Sloan, from Larkin, from the coaching staff. Larkin, 11 points and 5 assists. At this point, they're just streams for assists, and you hope that it's the game when they get the extra minutes. But in terms of being able to predict that, no idea. Wayne Ellington moved back to the starting lineup. He played 27 minutes and had 1 point. I'm not sure why they're persisting with Ellington when they've got some younger players who they can develop. Sergei Karasev, Markel Brown, who was a DMP CD in this game, which is odd. But surely that Ellington is going to lose all of his playing time when Rondae Hollis-Jefferson returns. Sean Kilpatrick is a nice points stream as well. 15 points with 2 triples in his 21 minutes, but he's not going to be able to get a big enough role to put up consistent numbers, I wouldn't have thought. The Pistons, their starting five was lackluster, and for once, their bench unit came through massive. Stan Johnson, 10, 7, and 6, 4 steals and a 3. The biggest takeaway for this from Johnson is not for this season, because that's great, but I don't think you're going and thinking, oh, he's going to do this every game. He's a 14-team league guy, but what it does is you look at him in a dynasty and go, this is what he can do. He's a great guy getting steals, but the assists, don't think that that's crazy. 6 assists seems high, but he can run the second unit, and he's run the second unit for a lot this season. He can distribute the ball, and he can be a guy that gets assists. So keep that in your mind for Stan Johnson, that he has got an ability to develop that into his game. Aaron Baines went for 21 points, 7 rebounds, and a block in just 19 minutes. That will never be repeated, despite how much I think that he can produce. That sort of the performances are ridiculous. And Anthony Tolliver had 17 points with 4 triples, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists. These guys are all deeper league guys who gave you a massive boost today. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, only the 11 points, but did add 8 assists and 4 rebounds, so helpful there. Toby Harris went 13 and 6 in his 24 minutes, and Marcus Morris, off a hot night yesterday, struggled for just 9, 3, and 2 in 24 minutes. As I said, all the starters got really limited run. Reggie Jackson, 14 and 4 in his 25, and Andre Drummond had 16 and 9 in his 29 minutes. He missed all 6 of his free throws, Drummond. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers is the next game. Steve Adams with a huge game per field goal percentage wise, 5 of 6 from the field, 11 points, 2 rebounds, 3 steals. A really nice, as I've said it plenty of times, he's a really great punt free throw 12 team league guy, India bench guy. Enes Kanter, another double-double in limited minutes, 15 and 10 with a block, great percentages, 24 minutes. He has been ridiculous. I would love to see him get 30 minutes a game again because he was unbelievable last season. And yes, he's got a real massive defensive deficiency. I'll need to look up all his defensive numbers at some point and really get into it. But offensively, he is one of the best. And offensive rebounders, he is one of the best as well. Russ Westbrook, another triple-double, 14, 11, and 14, three triples and a steal. 4 of 17, you're not a massive fan of that, but his field goal percentage has been pretty good this season. Serge Ibaka returned from his rest and was, he might as well keep resting, 8 and 4 in 23 minutes. He had a block as well. He needs to do a lot more than this, obviously. Campaign got 10 minutes, so at least he's playing. Randy Foy played 29. I don't even know what to say about that. 12 points, two triples. It filled up the box score pretty well. Two rebounds, one assist, one steal, one block. But he is your 16 team league guy. And his emergence has also reduced Deion Waiters' playing time, who played just 18 minutes here and had 9 points. Andre Robertson played 29 and had four. Onto the Pacers, Paul George, 45 points. He had seven rebounds, four assists, two steals, and four triples on 14 of 29 shooting and 13 of 15 from the free throw line. So some pretty big numbers from him. And Georgie Hill, who I talked about earlier, 23 and 9, two steals, three triples, big percentages. He'd been putrid for about 2 months, and he was definitely someone you could consider dropping. This is a big performance. He's a back end of your bench guy at this point. Monte Ellis played 42 minutes. He went 11, 6, and 7 with three steals. And Miles Turner bounced back after a really lean run. 10 and 8, a steal, two blocks. But more importantly, he played 31 minutes. Jan Mahinmi, who had been out with that back issue, he was back after missing a game. So that's beneficial. 11 and 5 and really hurt both percentages here. But Mahinmi, if he's playing, he's a real nice punt free throw ad. The rest of the bench, there's not much to really like from those guys. Nobody played barely at all. The starters all got very, very heavy runners. It's not often you see Jan Mahinmi play 36 minutes. The Cavs and the Heat with a pretty easy victory in the end, and it led to some weird box scores. Richard Jefferson played 29 minutes and had 20 points. He had three triples and four rebounds on 7 of 10 shooting. That is deep league special. The Cavs went with a different starting lineup. They started Kevin Love at center, and he played 16 minutes. J.R. Smith played 19 minutes. LeBron played 27. Kyrie played 27. So it's fair to say that once the game was out of hand, which it was pretty early on, the Cavs just packed it in and said, "Oh, we're done, boys. We're gonna just change things up and not gonna stress our stars all that much." So it's obviously pretty disappointing if you owned these players in a matchup like Kevin Love, who only had the 7 points. LeBron went 26, 3, and 3, so that's still pretty good. And Kyrie, 14 points with three steals and four assists. Not much else really to report. Iman Shumpert's the guy who replaced Timofey Mozgov in the starting lineup, and he is not going to be standard league relevant. And not much else to talk about at all. Tristan Thompson, 2 points in his 18 minutes. On the Heat, Josh Richardson. 32 minutes, 19 points, 4 of 6 from 3 again, 2 points, two rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. Has to be owned. He just has to be owned. His shooting is that red hot, is ridiculous, but it's not everything that he does. He will still rebound. He will still block shots. He will get steals. He hits threes, obviously. He has to be owned at this point. It is amazing. I was so big on Richardson earlier on this season and really, really liked him and thought Joe Johnson arriving is going to really nullify him. But no, it just means that they're just going to piss the other useless guys off, like Gerald Green, out of the rotation and let Richardson just go crazy. And he is doing it. I really, really like Richardson. You know that. Joe Johnson was good too. He was more than good. 18, 3 and 2, 4 triples and 2 steals on 7 of 11 shooting, putting up big numbers. Goran Dragic, 18, 4 and 11. He had a bit of an issue with his elbow in the end of the game, but he thinks it's going to be fine. Hassan Whiteside, 16 and 13 with 2 blocks in 24 minutes. And Dwayne Wade had 24 in his 28 minutes on the court. Luol Deng didn't play much, only 23 minutes in this one. The game was out of hand, so that's fair enough. You got McRoberts 12 minutes, you played Gerald Green 11 minutes, you played Udonis Haslem 6 minutes. That's fine. The game was out of hand. It just doesn't help you for fantasy when Deng goes for 3 and 3 in 23 minutes, but so be it. Justice Winslow, 4 points in his 31 minutes. He had 4 assists and a steal, and he's really a tough own in a standard format. Houston and Atlanta, Jim Harden, 25, 6 and 8, 3 threes, 1 steal, 1 block. He just does what he does. Let's hope that limping is not too much of a concern. But we need to talk about Michael Beasley, who had 20 He played 28 minutes and he scored 30 points. He had 9 rebounds. He did nothing else, but 12 of 18 shooting, 6 of 6 from the line. I think you got to own him. I think that you have to own him in 14-team leagues, definitely. In 12-team leagues, this is not fake. He is playing a stack of minutes. He is taking a lot of shots, and he is the second-team offense. The other guys, the other crap at power forward is just not getting a sniff. He is playing a lot of minutes, and Mike Beasley is someone who really has to be owned in majority of 12-team leagues. That scoring, you can't get that. The percentages, the rebounding. He's not doing much in the other categories, but points, rebounds, field goal percentage is very, very handy, and he's doing it very well at the moment. It could be a fluke, who knows, but they've found something here. Dwight Howard, 8 points, 17 rebounds though, 4 steals and a block. His usual poor free throw shooting, bad shooting from the field, and he also had that incident with the stick'em, the stuff they spray on their hands to make their hands sticky. Apparently it's illegal in the NBA and he got busted. He's been doing it, he claims, for the last 5 years. He hasn't been trying to hide anything, is all that Dwight's saying. My thing is, when you're already a shit shooter from the free throw line, yeah, from the field, why are you spraying your hands with sticky stuff so the ball doesn't release cleanly? Is it really that much of an advantage in grabbing a rebound? When your hands are legitimately already the size of a dinner plate, why does that extra stickiness, you need that to grab the ball when it's surely impacting your shooting? Surely. And I saw someone tweet out that Dwight Howard had a bit of a decline in his free throw shooting 5 years ago, which is apparently when he started using this. I can't imagine shooting with sticky shit all over my hands. It can't come out well. It can't. And I don't imagine the advantage you get from plucking an extra rebound from having your hands like Spider-Man is going to really help. It just seems odd. But you know what? A lot of the decisions that Dwight Howard makes are odd, so I wouldn't put it past him. Trevor Ariza, only the 7 points, but did have 4 steals, which could be a real key stat in a fantasy matchup. Donatas Motiejunas, 13 and 6 in 21 minutes. The injuries are going to keep him from being 12-team relevant, but he is a real favorite of mine. And Pat Beverley played 39 minutes. He had 4 points, but he did chime in with 5 assists, not his best night. And I talked about those other power forwards. Montrezl Harrell played 2 minutes. Clint Capela played 10. KJ McDaniel's got 2, and still no Josh Smith and no Terrence Jones. Very interesting to see what Jones does in the offseason. Interested to see, do the Rockets even extend a restricted free agency offer sheet to him? He is terrible. There's no doubt about that, but interesting to see what happens with him and if anyone goes and overpays for him. For the Hawks, Timmy Hardaway, 20 minutes, 20 points, 5 triples, 3 rebounds, 2 steals, 7 of 11 shooting. Obviously, the shooting is not realistic, but he's providing a real key role for this team, and his defense has been much, much improved. Al Horford, 22 and 9, 2 threes, a steal, 2 blocks. We don't talk enough about Al Horford. His ability to hit threes this season has been incredible. We saw it in preseason. What's going on here? Why is Al Horford all of a sudden taking threes? We saw plenty of big men in preseason start nailing threes. Pau Gasol, Brook Lopez, Al Horford, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis were just jacking threes, and we're looking at it going, is this real? Like, how do we project this as to these guys? Is it just a preseason trend? Well, for most of these guys, it's not. They're taking threes, they're hitting threes. Al Horford is attempting 3 threes a game. He's hitting 35% of them. He's hitting 39% of them the last 2 months. He has hit, on the season, he has hit 74 three-pointers. Last season, he hit 11. The season before, he hit 4. The season before that, 3, 0, 2. 74 he's hit. I am pretty confident that the amount of threes he's hit this season is well in excess of his career three-pointers. It is remarkable what he is doing this season. He's a top 25 player. He provides stats in basically every category. Now, he does now. He's, you know, positive points, threes, rebounds, assists. He steals are just marginally below a positive value. Positive blocks, positive field goals, positive free throws, positive turnovers. He is a positive in 8 out of 9 categories, and the one that he's not is steals, and it's he's only just marginally behind. So Horford is having an amazing roto season, an absolutely fantastic roto season, and he doesn't get talked about enough, and where he goes in the offseason is going to be really interesting. Kent Bazemore returned from his knee issue, 4 fouls in 16 minutes, 4 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. That's Kent Bazemore for you. And Jeff Teague, 5 points with 7 assists in his 25 minutes. Not a good night from From Teague, Dennis Schroeder played 22 minutes. He had 14 and 4, two threes. That's a decent night from him, but you've heard me talk plenty about him. And with Bazemore struggling, we have to really talk Thabo Sefolosha now. 10 and 4, but 5 assists, 5 steals, 1 3. And he keeps on putting up numbers, and I keep saying, oh, that's not real. That's not going to happen. But he's a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks. He's giving you a 3 a game, 1.5 threes, over half a block on 51% shooting. If you need threes, not threes, if you need steals and with some threes mixed in there and someone who's not going to hurt your percentages, Thabo has to be that guy. He's a 50% shooter on the season. He was 42 last year. Really hard to see why that's increased so much, but it has. And he's really helping this team, and he's providing a key role off the bench. And I still think that he is a better player than Kent Bazemore, and I would want him to play more if it was me rather than Bazemore out there. Paulie Millsap, 11, 10, and 6 with a couple of blocks. A nice night from him, nothing too spectacular. And Kyle Korver hit 3 triples for 11 points. He is not a must-own player to me, but he's a great 3-point add, obviously, if that's the category you're trying to target. Chris Humphries is the first big off the bench most nights. He played 14 minutes here while Mike Scott played 16, so Scott had some extra run, but Humphries is the guy in the deeper leagues and is going to have a bigger opportunity if Horford or Millsap happen to sit. The Los Angeles Clippers and the Memphis Grizzlies, that's a horrible, horrible loss for the Clippers to lose to this Grizzlies team. Chris Paul, 25 points, 3 rebounds and 6 assists. Good percentages, can't ask for more than that. And DeAndre Jordan, 16 and 7 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. 4 of 10 from the line is bad, but 6 of 6 from the field is good. And another guy we've got to talk about is Cole Aldrich. DeAndre Jordan's backup. I will continue to say this, but if he gets a starting job and he gets starters minutes, he will be a very, very good fantasy player. He only played 14 minutes here. He went 2 points, but 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. He was underused significantly in New York last season. He's a top 150 player in 13 minutes in the last month. That is ridiculous. His per 36 numbers for the season, 15 points, 12.5 rebounds, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 56% from the field. He's only at 67 from the line, but he's a better free throw shooter than that. If DeAndre Jordan was to miss any time, which it's unlikely that he misses time, Aldridge has great value. I would love him on a team that didn't have as much of an iron man of a center, and he could really develop into something. I think that he is really underrated, Cole Aldridge. I think his fantasy value is amazing as well. Jeff Green left with a gash on his head. He played 21 minutes, 8 points. He can go. Paul Pierce played 28 minutes in Green's absence. 12 points with 3 triples and 2 steals, but I'm not rushing to grab him. And the rest of the guys filled in there. Austin Rivers, Wes Johnson, Luke Marmute, but there's really no value in any of those guys. Rivers is the guy that you want in a deeper format, or Johnson if you want those defensive stats. Jamal Crawford was bad. 28 minutes for 7 points. He's not a standard league guy either. Zach Randolph, 28, 11, and 10 in 36 minutes. He went 10 of 19 from the field. He hit all 8 of his free throws. That is a tremendous game. I applaud you, Zebo. With Zebo back, Jermichael Green still played 27 minutes, and I think that's probably where he's going to sit in that 25 to 27 minute range, and he was good as well. 11 and 7, 4 assists, 4 steals, 1 block. The steals for him is something that's real, but I don't imagine he's going to be this productive most nights. He's still, look, if you're owning him in 12-team leagues, the return of Randolph makes you worried, but it doesn't make you automatically drop, as we saw here. There was no Matt Barnes in this one who was suspended, and that was a whole weird situation in itself. I talked about my thoughts on that the other day. The NBA's report was even more confusing, saying that John Henson received 2 technicals for that one play, apparently, and got ejected, and then Barnes was ejected for swearing at refs, even though the official score sheet said that Barnes wasn't ejected, that there was no free throws for any ejection from Barnes. It was a really weird situation. They said that he tried to get into the Bucks dressing room, which again, it had to have been not on that video, because on that video he did not go anywhere near that Bucks dressing room. Maybe he did it later on, but Barnes is going to be back after one game. Just a really very strange situation. Tone Allen played 32 minutes, 22 points on 7 of 10 shooting. Yeah, just don't imagine that from him again. But the steals and the out-of-position rebounds and the field goal percentage are pretty real. Ray McCallum started with Barnes out. He played 35 minutes and had 14 points, 3 assists, 2 blocks, and 2 triples. That's great if we knew that he'd play 35 minutes most nights, but he won't because Barnes will return. That'll move Lance Stephenson down to the 1. Now, Stephenson only played 28 minutes. He had 12 points. He had 2 steals, a block, 3 rebounds, and an assist. Interesting to see what happens with him as we move along, but he should continue to start, obviously. Xavier Munford played 20 minutes for 7 points. Briante Weber had 0 points in his 11 minutes. Jarrell Martin went 6-7 in 12 minutes. And Ryan Hollins, who started at center, played 14 minutes. So they went with a lot of Zebo and Jermichael Green at the 4 and 5. Utah at Chicago is the next game we look at. Derek Favors, hey, he was playing the Bulls, so of course he has a big game. 24-6, 1 steal, 2 blocks. Unfortunately, the Jazz did not get the win. Unfortunately for them, unfortunately for Bulls fans. Rudy Gobert, he really struggled here. He should have done better against the Bulls team. Only 27 minutes, no fouls, but 2 points, 7 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block. His disappointment continues. While Shelvin Mack's surprise explosion, even with Gordon Hayward back, Mack was great. 34 minutes, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 threes, 1 steal. Obviously has to be owned. Alec Burks will hurt when he returns to some degree. We don't know what yet. So even when Burks returns, it's not like I'm automatically dropping Mack. So I want to see how it plays out. Rod Hood played 38 minutes, 14 points because he only shot 5 of 17, added 3 threes, had 3 rebounds and an assist. Not his best night, but not terrible. And Hull Neto chimed in 9 points in 13 minutes. Haywood was disappointing in his return, 9-3-5 in 37 minutes, and that moved Joey Ingles back to the bench, who went 3-6-2 in 18 minutes. So it was fun while it lasted if you were a Joe Ingles owner. On the Bulls, Derrick Rose, 31 minutes, which is good to see him actually over 30 because the last two he'd been at 29. 22 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists. Nikola Mirotic moved to the bench and logically played more minutes than he has basically any time in 2016. 33 minutes for Mirotic, 15-6-3, 2 threes, 2 blocks. If you give him minutes, he's going to produce. That's just how it's going to happen. But predicting that is really going to be tough. They started Cristiano Felizio at center, and I assume that's to counter the Jazz big men. And I would imagine that Mirotic goes back to the starting lineup in the next game. Felizio had 4-2 in his 12 minutes. It never makes sense to me to, I'm going to start Felizio to counter the Jazz big men, but then play them 12 minutes. What about the other 36 minutes? Are you not worried about countering the two Jazz big men in those other 36 minutes? Or is it just for aesthetics at the start of the game? Is that all it is? It's weird. Bob Portis, 20 minutes, 9-5, 2 blocks and a 3. Yeah, pretty good line from Portis, but he's not a 12-team guy for me. Dougie McDermott fell back to earth. 7 points on 3 of 9 shooting, and that's the problem. If he goes 7 of 9, then Dougie McDermott went for 15 points or whatever he goes for. Another big performance. But if the shots don't fall, he gives you nothing else, and that is a concern for him. Mike Dunleavy played 26 minutes, and he's obviously over the ill effects of his illness, and that reduced McDermott's playing time as well. So McDermott, not a strong 12-team add to me. Jim Butler, struggling. I think it's fair to say 13-5-6 in 33 minutes. The shot's not falling. He can't get the minutes back up, but that's fine. Don't push him 40 minutes a game or else you're going to lose him and he's going to be out for a very long time. So at least the Bulls medical staff is doing, and the coaching staff is doing something related to common sense with Jim Butler. The last game of the night, the most anticipated game of the last couple of months, the Warriors and the Spurs. Very, very different games the last time these two played, with the Spurs really shutting down the Warriors. They won 87-79. Draymond, 11-9-8 with a 1-1, so almost a triple-double, 1-1 combo. Still a pretty good night from him. Steph was really off. He was 4 of 18. He was 1 of 12 from 3, 14-6-6 with 2 steals. Not a great night. And Klay Thompson, who's always going to struggle against that defensive pairing of Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, he went 15-5-1 with a 1-1. What about Harry Barnes? How did he go after his big slump breaker? I'm using inverted commas. You can't see me. 8 points, 2 threes, 2 steals, 3 assists. Leave him dangling on that waiver wire. Brandon Rush, who started in place of Andy Bogut, went 10-3 with a couple of triples. He is not a relevant player. And Sean Livingston had a pretty good night, actually. Only 2 points, but 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals and a block in his 22 minutes. It doesn't change anything about where you want to own Livingston. He is that deeper league guy only. I was anticipating a pretty big night from Maurice Spates. It didn't happen. He played 11 minutes as the Warriors went real small. 4 points for Spates. On the Spurs, Boris Diaw, 35 minutes. 14-8-2, 1 steal and a block. Fantastic. It just won't happen very often. So do not think, this is going to be the new Spurs. Kawhi was great, 18-14-4, two blocks. Aldridge went 26-13. Danny Green had 10 points, but 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 3 blocks, and a 3-pointer. That is peak Danny Green, exactly what he should give you. So make sure he is owned as well, despite the ups and downs. Patty Mills had 3 points in 21 minutes. Tony Parker went 6-3-6 in his 29 minutes. And David West was scoreless in 8 minutes off the bench. And Kevin Martin played 3. So it shows how much of a role he is going to have on this team. All right, that is all the games done. Now what I'm going to do is move into talking about the ads for the for the last matchup or the last day of a playoff matchup and try and help you get what category you need. Points. There's 6 games on Sunday. So who is going to be the best addition who is potentially sitting on your waiver wire for points? It obviously depends on your league, but if you only need points, Aaron Aflalo is not a bad ad. Now he might be there, he might not be. He is a solid guy to add if you're looking for scoring. If Darren Collison is around, he shouldn't be, but he is someone you add regardless. He is a decent points guy. Another guy that I don't mind for points is a couple of Dallas Mavericks players. JJ Barea and David Lee should get some extra scoring in this one with Chandler Parsons likely to be out. So there are a couple of options you can add for points there. Hollis Thompson is another points option. And Kelly Olynyk, not a bad guy to look at for that category as well. Let's transition over to the three-pointers now and see who is going to be our best option for threes from Sunday's games. We know there's plenty of guys that like Damian Lillard, but the best option to add for threes is going to be Isaiah Cannon. So if he is around, go and add him. If Rod Hood's around, he's another one. Terrence Ross, Hollis Thompson, they're the peak guys that you want to go and add. And then we can get down a bit lower in the list. Jared Bayless and Nick Stauskas and Pat Patterson if he happens to play. But Isaiah Cannon is the number one target if you're looking for three-pointers. Rebounds. Bring that up on my screen now. Okay, if you're looking for rebounds for tomorrow's games, Mace Plumlee is the one I want here. Playing against Dallas, he's been playing some extra minutes lately. He is a guy that I want here. Omer Asik is going to have to play some extra minutes with with Anthony Davis out. He won't play many minutes, but he can grab double-digit rebounds if he gets to 20 minutes. David Lee will get some extra run, and he's been rebounding at a ridiculous rate, so he's another option to add. Bismack Biyombo, if Jonas Valanciunas doesn't play, he's always going to be a good option in that case. And even if Valanciunas does play, I think you can get 6 or 7 rebounds out of Biyombo in a backup role. Amir Johnson is a bit more risky, but he is worth it. And Ed Davis is another guy who could thrive in that sort of situation. Let's look at assists, which sometimes can be a bit of a harder category to try and fill up off the wire, but there are going to be some options out there. Shelvin Mack, if he's not owned, he's a great one to look at. Evan Turner, who started the last game and he's taking on his former team, the Philadelphia 76ers. Mentioned Darren Collison already. JJ Barea, another guy there. Ray Felton, who will likely play extra minutes with Chandler Parsons out. So he is someone that's worth looking at. Obviously, Tim Frazier in New Orleans. If Norris Cole is out, he becomes a great option. And Tyler Ennis in Milwaukee, who's been playing more minutes lately, splitting the time with Jared Bayless. He might be a guy who can get some extra run and hand out some assists on Sunday. Let's now transition to steals and see if we can work out who might be a good source of steals that might be on your waiver wire. Marcus Smart, his minutes have tumbled lately, but he can be a guy who gets 4 to 5 steals in a game, so he could be someone you look at there. Evan Turner's a decent steals guy, which we've already talked about him. Tone Douglas is another guy who looks to get you 1 to 2 steals. I reckon he is an option. If Cole is out, there's going to be 30-plus for Tony Douglas. TJ McConnell in Philadelphia is a pretty good steals guy, and he's also going to help you with that assists category too. Shelvin Mack, another one. Ray Felton, not a bad steals player also. And Isaiah Cannon's been getting a few steals in some of his games recently. Blocks. Let's see who we look at for the blocks category. John Henson is probably the best option there. He is not suspended from that situation with Matt Barnes. He can go 4 or 5 blocks pretty comfortably. Jeremy Grant's another one who probably shouldn't be available, but he might be. He's going to get you blocks. Bismack Biyombo, Mason Plumlee, Miles Plumlee, Cole Aldrich is a real chance to get you 2 blocks, even in limited minutes. So he's another one you can have a look at. And then you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. You might look at Dwayne Dedmon in Orlando. You might look at Jordan Mickey in Boston, who's been blocking shots at a pretty significant rate. And Ed Davis in Portland is another one who can get you those rebounds and block numbers. Let's look at field goal percentage. Who's going to be the players that influence that category the most that might be able to be added off the waiver wire? It's hard because most of the guys who influence that category aren't available, but if Willie Cauley-Stein is around, he can be a guy who shoots 60% and does it on a pretty significant amount of shots. It might not happen, but he's definitely risky, but he's an option. Miles Plumlee, Amir Johnson, Cole Aldrich, John Henson, Bismack Biyombo, a lot of those same blocks and rebounds players are guys who are definitely in play at that spot. Jason Smith's another one, but he's probably a bit more risky. And the last category we're going to look at is free throw percentage. Which players available are going to boost that category the most? Again, you're looking at a couple of guys over in Los Angeles. Jamal Crawford is a great free throw percentage bump, but he is going to hurt your field goal percentage. JJ Redick, he should be owned, so if he's not, he'd be a good guy to look at. Rod Hood, Isaiah Cannon, Aaron Aflalo, both good options there. Ray Felton, Darren Collison, and if you're looking for a big man in that situation, Tyler Zeller in Boston is a really good free throw shooter, and he doesn't get an insignificant amount of attempts, so he'd be a name to look at. Alan Crabb in Portland is another one who is also worth an add if they happen to be available. I hope that segment was useful for you guys and helps you to get an idea of the players that are around and what their relative strengths are, and maybe you can stream them in for that last day, because if you're going to lose anyway, even if you have to drop a guy who's a top 75 player who doesn't play, you might have to do it. And yes, someone else might scoop them up, but they might also then have to drop someone good to pick up that player. And that might also help you moving forward. You need to really do everything you can to win this this last day and get yourself through to the next round in the playoffs. I'm going to take a quick break now, and then we're going to be back to talk DFS for Sunday. These games now. There are six of them, so let's get stuck into it. The first one is Portland and Dallas. The Trailblazers are favored by one. The total is 213 points here. Let's look at the point guards. Darren Williams is dealing with a calf issue. He said he's going to play. He said the Mavericks are desperate. They need the win, so he's likely going to play. But his minutes have been a little bit down lately, averaging just 28 across the last three. His production's been down as well. He's at 5,400, so he doesn't have a big salary, and it doesn't take him much to get to value. And it's not like the Damian Lillard defense is a real tough situation for him. He's a fine tournament guy. He could go for 30+, but there's no cash game trust there. If you're looking for a cheap punt option, JJ Brea is at 3,800. He will play extra minutes because Chandler Parsons is out. The Mavs will run with that three-point guard lineup a little bit more, playing Ray Felton a bit more at the three as well. So that will mean that Brea, well, he played 28 minutes in the last game, put up 26 points. He's averaging over 20 in his last three. He's got a very nice matchup here against the Blazers. So at 3,800, he just needs 20, 22, 23 points to really put together some. If he gets 24 points, that's over 6x value. And he's got a real chance of doing that. Ray Felton's the other one at 4,300. He dropped 28 in the last game. He should see close to 30 minutes in this one. The matchup is good. His production is not ideal, and he's more of a tournament option, I would have thought. Dame Lillard at 8,900. The salary is down. I don't hate using him here, but he's very much up and down. He's more of a tournament point guard. It's a bit hard to trust him in cash because he can go and put up a 25 or a 30-point night, and that's not ideal when you're spending 9,000 on him. Shooting guard, CJ McCollum bounced back in the last one. He dropped almost a 41-point game. He's at 6,800. The matchup is nice. His recent form has not really steered you towards using him, but at 6,800, that's not a massive amount for a guy who can go for 40+. So I think that he is in play, and even in a cash game, I don't hate him. Wes Matthews, I hate in all formats. Gerald Henderson's at 38. He easily exceeded that in his last game, and he's got a nice matchup. But the trust level in him is relatively low, as it is with Alan Crabb. It's even lower for Crabb. Small forwards, as I mentioned, Chandler Parsons will likely be out of this one with that hamstring issue. So Justin Anderson might get extra run. You would need to be pretty ballsy to run Justin Anderson out there, but I do like him as a player. Not sure that he's going to have much of an impact, though. Al-Farouq Aminu at 4,000. He's been putting together some okay lines from a standard league perspective. Not great, but in DFS, it's just not happening for him. He needs to get to 20, and it just feels like a struggle for him to do that. Same with Mo Harkless, who's not getting anywhere near as much run as what he was a month or so ago. Power forwards. David Lee is at 5,000. I reckon you have to use Lee almost. He's averaging 27 across the last three. He should have some extra usage with Parsons out, play some extra minutes. We've seen them running with Dirk at the five now. We might even see David Lee starting in this game. I think that this is a great spot to use Lee. As much as I can't believe the stuff that he's doing, I think you have to look at using him here. Dirk as well, 7,600. He's averaging 41.5 points across his last five. Just remarkable performances. He's playing a lot of minutes. He's on fire. This is not a matchup that really scares me for Dirk. I am fine with using him. His lowest score in his last five is 34. He feels pretty nice for cash and for tournaments. Ed Davis at 3,900. He's a great punt option. Dropped 28 in the last game. All he needs is minutes to really produce, and that can be a concern, but with Myers Leonard out, he's got more of an opportunity too. So Davis is someone to look at. At center, Mason Plumlee at 4,800, one of the best low price centers on the board. He is getting extra run with Leonard out as well. 4,800, he dropped 24 average across his last three. He's not being spectacular, but he's giving you really nice numbers, and going up against Dirk or David Lee or Zaza Pachulia is not a real tough matchup. As for Zaza, he's averaging 7 points across his last three, so he is obviously out of calculations. Orlando and Toronto is the next game that's up. There is no spread released for this one yet. I guess we're waiting to see the status of Nick Vucevic and Valanciunas, the two big European centers. We'll start with the point guards here. Kyle Lowry is priced at $9,000. If Alfred Payton is out, which he could be, he's currently questionable, Lowry at 9,000 makes a lot of sense. If Payton is in, he still makes a fair bit of sense. He's averaging 44 across his last five. He is absolutely red hot at the moment, and he feels like a relatively safe cash option and a nice tournament upside guy. He's almost had a 60-point game in his last five as well. Corey Joseph at 3,500. The projections really like him, but he is in a massive slump. At minimum salary, you can tournament him, and that's probably about it. If Payton happens to be in, I don't think I'd use him. If he is out, do we look at Brandon Jennings? It's a horrible matchup against the Raptors. So Jennings at 4,800. If he was at 3,800, yes, but at 4,800, I'm a little bit hesitant to use him. He'd be an interesting play, but I'm really scared that then they'll run CJ Watts in 30 minutes, or that Jennings will put up a 13-point performance in 32 minutes like he did in his last outing. Or Scott Skiles will run Shabazz Napier. In essence, don't trust Skiles. Shooting guard, Vic Oladipo is at 8,500. That is a massive bump. He has been awesome. He's averaging 49 points across his last three. But at 8,500, I do not trust Scott Skiles at all. This could be a blowout. Oladipo might play 29 minutes. At 8,500, he needs to go and give you 43 points. It's big. And I don't think I'll use him. I think that's a fade for me. DeMar DeRozan, I spend $200 less on DeRozan. He's at 8,300. He's been a little bit down lately, but still averaging 41 across his last five, which is just 1 point less than what Oladipo's been doing. And at 200 less, I feel okay with using DeRozan. I would rather use DeRozan than Oladipo here, especially in a tournament, because I think that you're going to have a lot of people on Oladipo after he dropped that huge game on the Cavs. Normie Powell, who could or should start again with James Johnson dealing with that plantar fasciitis, he needs DeMar DeRozan not to be there to really put up a big number, so I don't think he's worth looking at. And Terrence Ross is at 3,500. That's great, but he just doesn't do anything. Small forwards. Evan Fournier is at 6,000. He's sort of averaging just under 30 at the moment. I think I'm pretty confident with him getting over 30 in this one. It's more of a tournament look, but I don't hate it for cash games. He's been a little bit down, but he's likely to bounce back, I think. Mario Hezonja, 35. Bruno Caboclo, 35. We won't be using either of those guys. At power forward, Pat is dealing with an ankle issue. He's at 3,700. He might have been interesting, but probably not. But if he is out, we're going to have to see more Jason Thompson, and we're going to see more Luis Scola. Does that mean we want to use them? Thompson's at 3,500. So if Patterson is out and Valanciunas is out, I think that Thompson then becomes definitely someone who's interesting as a DFS play. Luis Scola, he's not going to be able to run big minutes. He did have 23 in the last game, points that is, in 21 minutes, but I would rather Thompson if those other things fall that way. If Vucevic is out, which it appears that he will be, Jason Smith at 4,100 is a decent tournament option. He's averaging 25 across his last five, but he has had a couple of stinkers in there and a couple of big games. I don't hate using him in a cash game, but he's definitely more leaning towards a tournament. Aaron Gordon has been terrible. His own fault, Skiles' fault, both of them at various instances. 6,000 for him, averaging just 23 points. The Raptors are really good at defending power forward, so I will not be looking at Aaron Gordon here. And the centers, Vucevic, Valanciunas, don't think they're going to play, so I don't think we're going to be looking at them. Bismack Biyombo at 5,500. Now, in the last game, he was put up 24 points, which at 5,500, he didn't retrieve value there, but I think we can expect some pretty decent numbers for him if Valanciunas happens to be out, but by no means is he a must-play guy. Same goes for Dwayne Dedmon if Vucevic doesn't play. Boston and Philadelphia is the next one that we look at here. The Celtics are favored by 11. The total is 215.5. They are not going to go easy, Boston. They need a victory. They've lost five of their last six. They might get an easy victory, but they are going to have to go hard at it. Isaiah Cannon's at 4,100. He is putting up 24 points a game over the last three. It's a tough matchup against the Celtics, but he doesn't need much to get going. So I think he's a great tournament guy to look at. Isaiah Thomas, on the other hand, 7,700. The salary has dropped. The matchup is brilliant. 35 points for him, I think it's definitely in play, and he is one of the better point guards on the board. Marcus Smart at 44 definitely hasn't been getting it done lately, but if there's an opportunity, this is going to be it. He is in play as a tournament. Ish Smith, no, not when Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart are playing defense on him. And Terry Rozier is a real intriguing guy here. He's at 35. He had 18 points in 10 minutes in the last game. There is an opportunity that maybe he gets some extra run in this one if the game is out of hand early, and maybe he puts up points. I think it's a real, real long stretch, but he's someone, if you want to go super contrarian in one of your lineups, I don't imagine anyone will have Terry Rozier. Shooting guard, Avery Bradley has been bad, but this is an opportunity for him, and he's a good tournament punt at 5,000, I think. Nick Stauskas at 4,100, strictly for tournaments. We don't know what's going to happen with him game to game. He dropped 36 in the last game. The trust in him is nothing, but the hopes for him are high. And that's sort of definitely the description you want for a tournament player. Bob Cove is not going to play. He looks like he's going to be ready to return on Wednesday, though, for you guys in seasonal leagues who might want to look at owning him or dropping him or doing whatever. He should return on Wednesday. Evan Turner at 5,500. Love this matchup for him against his former team. In the starting lineup, 30 points should be what he's looking at here, hopefully. And Hollis Thompson on the other side of things. He's at 4,200. He had 29 points in the last game. He's averaging 23 across his last five. I think he's a nice, solid cash game, cheap small forward. The other guys, Sonny Weems, James Young, Cody Clark. I don't think we need to be too fussed about any of their production. Power forward, Nerlens Noel. 7,000, so the salary's risen. This is a great matchup for him. He needs to go for 35, and that is not a tough thing for him, I think, in this one. Love using him here. Amir Johnson seen his minutes rise recently. I do not trust it at all. At 3,800, though, you can take a risk on it. And Jared Sullinger at 6,100, I'm not trusting him for the other reason, that his minutes and his production have dropped significantly since Kelly Olynyk has returned. Jeremy Grant's at 5,200. He had a nice game in the last one. He really hasn't been excelling lately, though, but the Boston front court might be what he needs to get back on track. So I reckon that he is a pretty solid option as well. All in all, you know, Nerlens Noel, Jeremy Grant, even Amir Johnson, there's some definite value in the power forwards in this one. Even Jordan Mickey, but that's more of a Terry Rozier sort of situation. Kelly Olynyk, 4,200. Hasn't had a big game since returning, but we know what he can do. This matchup is beautiful. He is a tournament option to me, but not a strong one. And Tyler Zeller at minimum salary. He could work out, but he probably won't. The Clippers and the Pelicans, the next one. The Clippers are favored by 7.5. The total here is 213 points. So let's look at what value we can get. Chris Paul is at 9,900. He is playing against the Pelicans. He could get 50 points here. I think that he is an okay option if you want to spend up, but I don't think that he's necessarily the best high-priced point guard. Jrue Holiday at 7,700, a really tough matchup going up against Chris Paul. He did have 44 in his last game, but prior to that, he'd really struggled. So I'm not sure, but now that I think about it, Anthony Davis is out, so Holiday's going to get more usage, more touches. Yeah, I don't hate it. He needs to get to 40 points, and it's not impossible for him. So yes, he is in play. Austin Rivers, Norris Cole, Tony Douglas, Tim Frazier. Tim Frazier's at minimum salary. If Cole is out, I look to play him in a tournament. If Cole is out, 4,800 for Tony Douglas. Is that too expensive? I don't know that it is if Cole is out, because 25 points for Tony Douglas, he's going to play 30 minutes plus, and he should be worth looking at in tournaments in that situation. Norris Cole at 57, and it just feels too high for a guy coming back from a back injury if he happens to play. Shooting guards, JJ Redick at 48. He's a tournament guy, not cash. And Jamal Crawford, same, at 4,700. Small forwards. There's a lot of players here, and none of them are very good. Jeff Green, Alonzo G, Wes Johnson, Paul Pierce, Luke Marmute, Luke Babbitt. Probably just move on to the power forwards, I reckon. What do you think? Dante Cunningham. Nah, he's not the big name here. Ryan Anderson at 6,100. He had 45 in the last game with AD out. He historically has put up massive numbers with Davis not playing. So he is someone to really look at. And I should have looked this up previously, but it just came to my head now. I'm going to have a look at what Ryan Anderson's differences are in terms of his fantasy points per minute. And this is all courtesy via NBA Wowie. You can get these numbers. I'll bring that up in a sec. And see what the difference is when AD doesn't play. He's at 6,100. He's already averaging 38 across his last three, Anderson. You should see a much bigger output from him with Davis out. I'm going to bring this up now and have a look. Sorry for this on the fly discussion. Ryan Anderson. Oh, now NBA Wow is not even working. There we go. Okay, so let's have a look. Ryan Anderson. I know this is thrilling. All right, let's have a look at what his seasonal rates are. So on FanDuel, Ryan Anderson this season is averaging 0.9 fantasy FanDuel points per minute. Let's have a look with Anthony Davis not on the court. He's averaging 1.01. So it doesn't seem big, but it's an over 10% jump. And that can be pretty significant. So Ryan Anderson is definitely someone that's in play here. Davis, I've already mentioned, is out. At center, Omer Asik, he might get some extra run here. He's at 3,500. It's pretty tough to rely on Omer Asik, though, so I don't think you'd use him. Cole Aldrich actually dropped 20 FanDuel points today. It's a nice matchup for him. If the game is out of control, you might see 20-plus from him, but I really think that's a struggle. And DeAndre Jordan at 8,400, really good matchup. 40 points is what you're looking for DeAndre, and I think that he has a decent chance of getting it. Utah at Milwaukee. No spread released for this one yet. The Jazz, it's always tough going up against the Jazz. Let's look at the point guard. Shelvin Mack is at 6,200. He had another 33 today. He now feels like a real solid cash game option, but his upside is maybe not high enough at 6,200 for tournaments, but he still can be useful. Tyler Ennis at 3,700 dropped 26 in the last game. He's sort of splitting minutes with Jared Bayless. He's a tournament punt at 3,700, I think, Ennis. Bayless not getting anything done, won't be using him. Hal Neto, Trey Burke, obviously not interested there either. Shooting guards, Chris Middleton's been down. He's at 7,700. It's a horrible matchup. If he goes off, so be it. I don't want to take that risk. Rod Hood at 5,500, just a little bit below expectations as well, so he's not an ideal play. Rashad Vaughn has been sent down to the D League. We wouldn't be using him anyway, so cool. Small forwards, Gordy Haywood, disappointed in his return. He's at 7,000. I think that he's actually not a terrible guy to look at. He's probably better options, but he's not terrible. And Giannis, he's the big one. He's at 10,200. It is a real tough matchup here. 10,200 means you need 50 points out of Giannis, and I think that I fade him at that price. Power forwards, Jabari Parker. He's also been just a little bit off with his production, only averaging 25 across the last five. He's at 6,300. It's a bad matchup against Favors and Gobert, so no thanks. On the other side, Favors, he plays the Bulls one night. He plays the Bucks next night. It's really great spot for him. 7,400, fine with locking him in. John Henson, He's 3,600. He requires to have a really big block night to really do much, so he's only a tournament option. Even then, the ceiling's not very high. At centre, we're still not using Greg Munro, even though he's down to 6,400. Rudy Gobert at 62. It's a positive matchup, but he's been positively shit, so I'm not sure that we even want to use him at that salary. And Miles Plumlee at 3,800 has been solidly, but with Henson back, the minutes are just too fluctuable to really have too much trust in him. The last game of the night, the Sacramento Kings and the New York Knicks. The Knicks are favored by 1 point. The total is 213.5. Let's look at point guards. Rajon Rondo, I'm not normally a massive fan of using Rondo, but at 8,100 facing up against whoever's at point guard for the Knicks, maybe Jose Calderon, 40 points should be what he's looking at here, and I don't think it's a tough ask. Jose Calderon, on the other hand, at 4,000, you'd love if it was a decent point guard playing against the Kings because their defense is terrible, but Calderon's not really a decent point guard. Can he get to 20 points? Maybe, but he's already dealing with an ankle injury, so I don't love him here. I do like Darren Collison at 5,500. Not a big salary, a great matchup. He's someone to definitely look at, especially with Ben McLemore out. And Jerian Grant, if he played, yes, great, but no trust there whatsoever. Langston Galloway is at 3,800. I think that Galloway is going to have a significant role. He could have Calderon out, he could have Mallow out, he could have both guys out. He's only at 3,800. He is a great option to me. Aaron Aflalo at 49, punt for a tournament, but even then, I don't place much trust. Marco Bellinelli has been shafted in terms of minutes with George Karl, so he's not worth a look. And James Anderson, who's inexplicably playing 30 minutes a night at the moment, he's priced at 3,600. He doesn't really do much in those minutes enough for fantasy, so he's a real deep tournament sort of punt. Small forwards, Mallow, if he's able to play, which again, the migraine is really up in the air, 8,800 for him against the against the Kings, it's super. He can easily go for 40 plus. Now, he hasn't been at his best. He's averaging just 38 across the last three, but it's not too bad at 8,800. You want him to go a little bit harder, but that's not terrible. Rudy Gay at 63, not getting it done. Omri Caspi, the injury is a little bit concerning. He's considered questionable at the moment. Power forwards, Willie Cauley-Stein at 3,700. Does he play? He missed the last game with an illness. He should be back, but it's not a great matchup against the Knicks. The power forwards do get restricted against New York, which is something they actually do well. So I'm not sure I want to use Cauley-Stein, and George Karl with his pig-headedness might stuff that up. Kristaps.
Percentages.
He's at 5,800. He dropped 32 today. It is a beautiful matchup. He is definitely worth a punt in a tournament. Definitely. In a cash game, I do not trust Kurt Rambis as far as I could throw him, which is not very far because he's a much bigger man than I am. Derek Williams at 38. He'd definitely come into play if Mallow is out. 3,800, 20 points. It should be enough if that happens. Quincy Acey, Kevin Serafin, Lou Amundson. Not worth the time it takes to write their name out or even to say them. At center, I like both these guys. Rob Lopez, 5,600. The problem with that is, I do like him, but you got to guard Boogie. And if you get into early foul trouble, which is very easy to do against Boogie, you're in a lot of trouble. His price is not high. He just needs to get you 27 or 28, and he could have a big night. It is a worry, though. He's more of a tournament option, but I think he's a good one. Boogie, on the other hand, at 11,100, that's a very high price. But he's basically 50 points a night. And at 11,000, you need to go to 55, but that's not tough for him to do. Can you see him doing that against a Knicks team who was really bad? Admittedly, they defend big guys well, but Cousins is in a different class. So I do think that he's a pretty good option as well. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now for Sunday. At point guard, JJ Barea, 3,800. I don't like any of the mid-priced point guards at all. And with the expensive ones, Rajon Rondo, 8,100. You could also throw Dame Lillard in there and Kyle Lowry in there as options too. At shooting guard, Langston Galloway, 38. CJ McCollum, 6,800. And DeMar DeRozan, 8,300. Small forwards, Hollis Thompson, 42. Ev Turner, 55. And Carmelo Anthony, 8,800. At power forward, Dave Lee, 5,000. Ryan Anderson, 61. And Dirk Nowitzki, 76. And the centers, Mason Plumlee, 48. Rob Lopez, 56. And DeMarcus Cousins, 11,100. We are done, guys. Good luck in your playoffs. Good luck in your final matchup. As always, you can tweet at me at redrock_bball. Find me on Instagram and Facebook as well. And over on Basketball Monster, which is basketballmonster.com. And follow our Twitter account over there, which is @BaskMonster. if you are eliminated from the playoffs, please still stick around. There's going to be lots of DFS content and heaps of stuff happening throughout the NBA postseason and offseason and preseason. Lots of stuff happening, including all the details for the announcements of all of the listener leagues will happen throughout the offseason. So make sure you are still tuning in and subscribe to the podcast. This podcast will not go away. It will still be in your heads, not every day necessarily through the offseason, but it will still be there with tons of content, draft stuff, free agency stuff, fantasy stuff, everything will be happening on this show. So make sure you are still staying tuned and listening to the show. We are done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.